Walking in the mini mart, there's food on the floor. There's carts everywhere, there's blood on the door. I just wanna buy some snacks and get back home. But these ghouls are trying to eat my bones.
Hello and welcome to episode number 82 of Seattle Geekly, where we speak geek. I'm Shannon, your host, and he's my zombie buddy, Matt.
Brains. I mean, welcome to the show.
Forget sparkly vampires. Zombies are where it's at.
Sparkly zombies? And of course, since it's October, this is the best time to think about them.
Yes. Today we talked to Brother D of the Mail Order Zombie podcast about zombie movies, video games, and why zombies are still so popular.
That plus a little bit of geek news. But first, Shannon, how geek was your week?
Well, I read the steampunk novel Mainspring from Jay Lake.
Yes.
I didn't really like it.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. You know, we've met Jay before, and he's such, like, an awesome person. And so I was like, well, you know, SteamCon's coming in November, and I should get my steampunk on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd get Mainspring. And it's about an apprentice clockmaker who gets put on a adventure from God, apparently, to help recharge the earth or wind up the spring.
Wasn't there a movie kind of like that, only they had to go in and, like, reignite the Earth's core or something like that?
Yeah, except it's kind of like the Earth is kind of like a clockwork
thing. Uh-huh.
So this is the first one, Mainspring. I was looking for... this is, like, the second book where I'm like, woohoo, steampunk! And it's not exactly steampunk. Like, the Anubis Gates, I thought it was steampunk. Turns out time travel. Now, Mainspring, it's like... It was too religious for me. It was too weirdly... And the thing is, like, it jumps so quickly into the story that I actually didn't care about the main character at all.
Oh, that's...
So I was like, I really don't care what he does at all.
Oh, dear.
So we also have the second book, Escapement, but I'm not going to read it.
Oh, no. Well, it sounds kind of interesting to me. I might pick it up.
Yeah, I mean...
Does it seem like something that I would have enjoyed?
I think so. It's more understated and that kind of thing, but I did not enjoy it. And
okay.
I'm not gonna read it.
All right. Well, I'm getting dangerously close to being caught up with most of my reading. So.
Oh, I forgot one other thing on here. But I am reading 4 and 20 Blackbirds by Sherry Priest.
Oh, right. Yes.
Which is a Southern Gothic horror ghost story kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. Completely unrelated to her Clockwork Universe books.
Yes. Speaking of steampunk.
Yeah.
Eden Moore is a Southern girl. I think she's from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And she can see ghosts. Apparently, it's something that has happened throughout her family. And, of course, you know, her family's all kind of messed up because her mom died when she was born. And so there's weird stuff that she doesn't know her dad was. And she never really knew her mom. And so she's being raised by an aunt. And it's really interesting. It's one of those books that has really, really long chapters.
Uh-huh.
So, like... Normally, I read a chapter a night or a couple chapters a night out of a book.
Right.
So, one chapter out of this book is pretty long, so it's easy to get kind of wrapped up in it.
Oh, cool. All right.
It is very Southern Gothic stuff. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy it. And I know it's the first of 3 books.
Yeah.
So, we'll see if I'll be interested in, you know, reading the other two, so.
Yeah, well, if...
It's very well written.
You've also been playing some Warcraft, haven't you?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So, it's Hallow's End.
Yes.
Right now,
and of course, the big 4.0 patch, the patch that changes everything right before Cataclysm drops.
Right, which actually...
The big pre-Cataclysm.
Yeah, every once in a while, the whole world will shake.
Yeah, that's the world events before, yeah.
Yeah, well, sometimes I don't actually I don't listen to playing it. I'll watch TV while I'm just playing it on mute or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it really freaked me out because that was the first time the world shook. And I was like, what is going on?
It's Deathwing coming up from the depths of the underworld.
I was just hoping I wasn't having a stroke. So, because I was like, what? Oh, no.
See, as far as, you know, pre-expansion events goes, you can't beat the zombie apocalypse.
Someone
before
was talking
Lich King.
About that. I know. Hallow's End, though, is the Halloween event.
It's always fun. One of my favorites, the Halloween event.
Yeah, my little druid that I've been playing, she got the Sinister Squashling out of a treat bag.
Nice.
That's a blue little pet.
Little blue non-combat pet. It's this scary pumpkin with, you know, vine feet, and it follows you around.
Well, it follows you around, and then if you don't do anything. It sits, just looks like a pumpkin for a while, then it like runs to catch up with you. It's really creepy. So you get to trick or treat every hour to various, you know, innkeepers. Mm-hmm. And right now my tauren female druid is wearing a female night elf mask.
Very, very scary.
Looks really wrong. but no, I'm having a great time on WoW. You know, we take some some time off from the podcast around Thanksgiving and Christmas, so yeah, I think this is what I'll be doing.
Yeah, that'll be around the time the Cataclysm's coming out.
Yeah, the 7th of December. So,
there you go.
I just love playing the game. I'm not in a guild. I could care less about the social thing. I just love playing the game.
Other people. What bastards.
Hey, you know what? I've made a lot of money signing guild charters and then leaving the guild.
Yeah, it's a legitimate way for ungilded players to make some money.
Exactly. So how geek was your week?
As I mentioned, I've been catching up on a lot of reading. The bad news is I've been feeling... I think I got the funk that you had, where I've just been like
because I had two in a row.
Totally, totally low energy, tired all the time. Yeah. That's the bad news. The good news is that that's made it very easy for me to just sit on the couch and read.
Right, right, right.
So I've knocked out The Strain
right.
and The Fall.
Right,
which we'll talk about in a minute, because we both read, both finished The Fall. And I also read Sherry Priest's Dreadnought.
Okay.
So I was also reading Sherry Priest. It's very good. It's not a direct...
Don't say too much, because I have it on an audiobook that I will be listening to next week.
Well, it's not a direct sequel to Boneshaker.
Right.
It's definitely set in the same universe. I mean, you could almost pick this up first and read it, although I think you get more background, more of a rooting in the world in Boneshaker. But it's very good. Yeah, the characters are excellent.
Now, is the main character another woman?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes, and a nurse.
Okay, because I actually, I downloaded the audiobook. I have it. It's read by Kate Redding,
mm-hmm.
and she's the one that did Boneshaker with Will Wheaton for the audiobook, but mm-hmm. Will Wheaton's not coming back in this, because...
Well,
because the main character is a woman.
So. Right, and there aren't really... It's much more focused on her... Boneshaker was kind of jumping between a couple different storylines. This is very solidly one story about the main... Yeah. character. Okay. And of some familiar characters from Boneshaker do show up near the end of the book.
Okay.
But yeah, you do it's very well written. Okay. I have to say it was very compelling. I read it in a single sitting just because it was quite the page turner,
mm-hmm.
As they say.
Well, together, like you said, we both finished The Strain and The Fall by Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan.
I read them. You listened to them on audiobook.
Right, and I had already read this, or had The Strain read to me.
Right.
So what did you think?
Well, we talked about The Strain last week.
Right.
Didn't we? Yes. And The Fall is a worthy successor. As you would expect with the middle book in a trilogy, it doesn't end well.
Yeah, there's some bad things that happen to some of the good people in there.
But I'm very eager to see what the third book is going to be
I think the third book's going to be called The Devouring or something like that.
Oh, terrific. So starting off on a good note, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a vampire.
And I stand by my assertion that Guillermo del Toro had a lot of ideas that he really liked in Blade 2.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to see them kind of just languish in kind of a cheesy movie.
Right.
So he took them out and is adding them to his vampire universe.
Now,
it's not a bad thing.
No, but the thing is, I did just look on IMDb before we started recording. He had nothing to do with the writing of Blade 2.
Yeah.
So I don't know if those guys are going to get a little mad at him, because it's essentially...
Yeah, I mean, there are some definitely similar elements.
Yeah.
I don't want to say too much because, I mean, a few of them are kind of spoilery.
But yeah, seriously, you know, if you kind of enjoyed the background of the virus vampires in Blade 2, you need to
the sort of meta vampires.
Yeah. So the audiobook, the first one was performed by Ron Perlman.
Yeah.
And, you know, the second time listening to it, I wasn't as, like, freaked out. That Ron Perlman was talking to me for 14 hours. the second one is not by Ron Perlman, but a guy called David Oreskes.
Okay.
Who has kind of the same kind of gravelly voice.
Uh-huh.
The only thing that I really just do not enjoy between audiobooks is if they change performers, sometimes people say the wrong... pronounce things differently.
Yeah.
And in this case, David decided to lose an accent of one of the characters that Ron Perlman had done.
Oh, so it's not just pronunciation, it's more of a performance thing.
It's a little performance thing. And, it, you know, after a while I was okay with it, but I kind of enjoyed the character in the first one, and then he kind of lost the accent in the second one, and then it was like, okay. I mean, I don't know how they kind of interpret stuff. I really don't know how audiobooks kind of work. But it was really well done. And the fall didn't have as much cheesy music between
well, that's good.
Chapters like The Strain did. So, you know, if you don't have time to read it, seriously, audiobooks are really good.
Yeah, and if you're a fan of the vampire genre, Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan, they're one of the big reasons that they wanted to write this was to de-romanticize the vampires, and they've done an excellent job of making vampires scary and threatening again.
And almost bat-like.
Yeah, or leeches or ticks, or there's a lot of that kind of imagery.
And the excrement kind of bit.
Oh, yeah, that bats and rats, and yeah, they're definitely... Definitely parasitic.
Yeah, and it's still in New York, which is cool.
Yeah.
All right, and last Saturday after my dad's poker birthday party that we did.
Yes.
We on the way home, we stopped downtown to the Zaxxy 24-hour video game marathon.
That's right. The women from Zaxxy, Britt and Tara, two of them anyway.
Yes.
Were doing the Extra Life video game marathon. This was to raise money for children's hospitals across the United States. Mm-hmm. And they were... playing video games for 24 hours.
Yeah, so we showed up, I don't know what time it was, because I'd been drinking a lot at the poker thing, but...
It wasn't that late, it was maybe eight or nine, yeah.
Right, so they had all the consoles, Wii and all that, so what was it, Just Dance, the first one?
The first Just Dance for the Wii.
All four of us played that was pretty awesome. That was really fun.
I'm embarrassed, I was reluctant to try it, just because it's a dance game. And
it was being streamed live.
and it was being streamed live on the internet. So, you know, that's exactly what I want to do, is dance like a monkey in front of, you know, a live internet audience.
Yeah.
But it actually was a surprising amount of fun.
Yeah. Well, once we get the Kinect for the Xbox, there's a couple of dance games I want to get, so we'll see.
And we also played bowling.
Right, the Brunswick bowling that we had for the PS Move, which is really fun.
It is.
I beat everybody left-handed. It's pretty good. Putting myself on a handicap because I'd been playing it a lot. But
you're now Inigo Montoya now?
Yes.
I am not left-handed.
I am not left-handed. And the weird thing was, is while we were there, we're sitting there, and, you know, these girls have been up since 8 a.m. playing video games.
Yeah,
and probably 12 hours.
It was exactly 12 hours.
And Tara's fiancé, Alex, also had the funk at that point, and he had taken NyQuil. And they went to bed, and the fire alarm went off in their building.
Yes.
Downtown, which means all of the elevators you couldn't do. Luckily, we were only on the fourth floor.
Right.
So we had to, like, walk down, and Britt's yelling, grab the console!
Yes, that was Britt's first response, which I think cements her status as sort of an uber geek.
Yeah.
The fire alarm goes off. Her first response is, grab the console!
And then Tara's like, we gotta still play! Where's my DS? Yeah. And so... We all ran down, waking Alex up, who thought that the whole 24-hour thing was over because he saw that it was 8, and he thought it was 8 a.m., even though it was freaking dark.
8 p.m., yeah.
Turns out a toddler pulled the fire alarm, so that was really fun.
Yeah.
So we went back up and played... What did we play? Mario Kart.
Yeah, after that we played a little Mario Kart.
And then they had some more friends show up, so we left them to a penguin girl.
Yeah, the girl in the penguin suit, which there's an animated GIF of the girl in the penguin suit playing...
One of the dance games.
Oh. So check out Zaxxy.com. They do great geek coverage. They're getting into tabletop role playing.
Oh, cool.
Which is awesome because Michael Robles from Wizards.
Oh, yeah. They brought a bunch of
stuff.
Was
teaching them to play Gamma World and stuff. So that's very cool. So check out Zaxxy.com. Yeah.
And then today, which is the reason why the podcast is pretty late today.
Yes.
You're probably hearing this on Friday now. We actually got to go to the press tour of the behind the scenes 2 days before it opens, the Harry Potter, the exhibition at the Pacific Science Center.
Yeah, we mentioned this last week and said that we were going to be talking more about it this week because the press tour was, in fact, today.
Yes.
And it's amazing.
It is amazing.
Definitely for fans of the movies more than the books.
Right, because... It seriously is just a whole exhibition of, you know, the movie props.
Yeah. Costumes, props.
Various pieces of paper that just were in the background. Like, the strangest thing. But it's so immersive. They're going to be giving, I think they did this for the Lucy exhibit, too. They're going to be giving people, like, oh, you come at noon, you get to go at 1 o'clock to go to the Harry Potter thing.
Right. This is to cut, it's sort of line management. It's like the fast pass system at Disneyland. You know, you get your ticket and you get a time to show up at the door and then they let you in.
Well, and there's a reason. I don't want to spoil why, but there's a reason that they're doing that, because there's a couple of stages that you'd go through before you can even go and see the exhibit.
So, part of the immersive quality of it, yes, is right at the beginning.
Now, you can't really touch anything, which kind
of
sucks.
Well, there are a couple of things there are a couple of small interactive bits.
Right. But the
very minor.
Exactly. The audio tour is very cool.
The audio tour was informative. I found that a lot of the commentary, it cut off very abruptly. So I didn't.
Yeah, they were very short. They weren't as long as, like you go to the art museum and stuff.
And they did end very abruptly. So I was caught several times waiting for them to go on and, you know, make some larger point. And it was, oh, that's it.
That's
okay,
it.
Moving on.
Apparently, if you're going to go to the Harry Potter, we were checking prices today while we were there.
Yeah, it is a little pricey.
It is a little pricey. It's like $18 to $26.
Yeah, for kids or
kids to adults,
depending on time.
If you are a member, it's $10 or $15 with the audio tour.
And if you are planning on going more than once, which you may very well want to do, or if you're planning on bringing your kids, it may not be a bad investment to just get a membership to the Pacific Science Center, which is not a bad thing to do anyway.
No, for a couple, it's, was it $70 for
something
a year
like that,
membership?
Yeah.
For up to six household members of a family was $80.
Yeah.
Now, of course, then you're paying the $10 each, but you get all these, like, IMAX passes.
Yeah,
and
you get a
stuff.
Ton of it. You get IMAX passes. You get
guest passes.
Yeah, and you get easier entrance. There's a members entrance, so you don't have to fight through. Yeah.
Now, the only thing I would like to kind of warn people, other than the price, the audio tour is cool. You're not going to get much out of it unless you're older. So maybe 12, 14 years or older, because not only do most of the people on the audio tour have accents, which, you know, kids are not normally used to probably listening to that kind of thing.
And they're mostly talking about really kind of behind the scenes,
prop making,
costume choices, design choices, things like that.
The costume designer is a French woman. I love the way she said Quidditch, but because we seriously listened to every single audio tour thing today. And it is really cool. If you're very, very interested in the props, get it. But if you're going to go back and see it, you don't need to get it again. So don't spend the $5. At the end of the exhibit, there is a huge store, which is one of my favorite things, instead of the BSG.
The swag.
All the stuff that you get to buy at the end. They have put it together, put the little store together like you're in Diagon Alley. It is just amazing. You can buy, you can pretty much buy anything that you've seen in the exhibit, but in a consumer kind of
reproductions.
Version. Yeah, reproductions. Other than, you know, the costumes and stuff.
Right, yeah.
And you can't buy kitten plates. But you might not want to buy kitten plates. The cool thing about the Seattle tour is that a bunch of the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2 props have only been in this exhibit, not in Chicago, Boston, or Toronto.
So because they were actually using them for filming, and now they're not.
So, as we were at the press tour, Bellatrix Lestrange's outfit in Deathly Hallows Part 2 actually whisked by us to be inserted where it was, like, 10 feet from us.
It just arrived, it just flew in from the set, and they were installing it as we were there, so that was very cool.
That was really cool. That was the only thing we were allowed to take a picture of.
Yep.
Yeah, please be aware there's no photography or video at all in the thing.
Yeah.
Because it's still, we asked the guy who kind of was the curator, this is going to be going worldwide for the next 2 years.
Yeah, Seattle is its last stop in the United States, but it's moving from here to around the world.
Right, and it's just, I mean, it's so amazing.
It is very cool.
If you're a movie geek and if you really enjoyed the Harry Potter movies, it was amazing.
it's much, much larger than the Battlestar Galactica exhibit is going to be. But I think the Battlestar Galactica exhibit is probably going to be a little more interactive. I think they're going to have more...
Yeah, because there were really only three things you could do in the Harry Potter exhibit, and we don't want to, you know, say anything.
We don't want to spoil anything.
It's really fun. So if you are fans of the movie, seriously go. It opens this Saturday, the 23rd of October, goes only through the end of January 2011.
Yeah. So get out there and see it.
Get out there and see it, and you're also going to be able to, this is the first time that the exhibit has been paired with the IMAX releases of the movies.
Right. The Pacific Science Center is also doing the Harry Potter Film Festival.
They're starting showing, with Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah, which starts this weekend.
Yes, and then they will actually be debuting the Deathly Hallows Part 1 while the exhibit's still there.
Yes, on November 19th. So you'll be able to watch Deathly Hallows and then run across the courtyard and see all of the costumes and props that they were just using.
One of the neatest things I saw in the thing, and this is not, you know, like spoiling anything, knowing that the robes and costumes that are 2 feet away from me were actually worn by Alan Rickman, Gary Oldman, and Richard Harris, the original Dumbledore, was amazing.
That was
and
really
Maggie
cool.
Smith. Yeah. I mean, just like, oh, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's actually... was worn by Richard Harris, and the guy's like, oh yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it's very cool for the movie geeks.
Now, did we want to talk about how kind of scary it is a little bit?
It's a little spooky. If your kids can sit through the movies without getting too freaked out, they will be able to go through the exhibit.
Right.
There is, of course, you know, the Forbidden Forest and Dark Forces sections of the, which can be, they're a little creepy.
They're a little creepy. We were even kind of creeped out.
The really young kids might get a little intimidated.
Now, luckily they did kind of like, you know, it's the monsters in the Forbidden Forest. So we're talking like the spiders and, you know, the dragon and all that stuff. The spiders in the movie freaked me out. I can't remember exactly which movie it was because I don't remember. But very creepy. You know, there's some Death Eater stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, if you have a 6-year-old who can watch all the movies except anytime Voldemort's on, don't take them to this. It's going to be a little creepy.
Or just, you know, hurry them through those sections.
Close your eyes.
Yeah.
But there's some amazing, it's the best use of that area of Building 4 at the Science Center that I've ever seen. It's absolutely immersive, absolutely just worth it if you're a fan. So,
yeah, definitely check it out.
So that was our Geek Week.
Straight from horror to reality, reality is chasing me. I've got the sinking feeling that my screaming is revealing my location, my vocation at the moment is momentum and escaping the sensation of cerebrum and postmortem combination. See, the kind of mastication focuses on my possession of gray matter calculation, my cerebral PlayStation. Obsession of the masses, a confession to the classes, never wanted to be cast in role of appetizer.
Fertilizer for the fermentation, I regret that this insanity is cause of demonization of my psyche. It's just like me, first to panic, then prevaricate. It's scary that I never heard a sage or soul prognosticate.
We are talking with Brother D, one of the hosts of Mail Order Zombie.
The main one.
The main host. Well, you know.
Don't let Miss Bren hear this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't want to leave Miss Bren out. Anyway, Brother D, thanks so much for talking with us.
Hey, no problem. How's it going, guys?
So, pretty good. Brother D is kind of from Portland.
Pretty much from Portland.
It's a little outside of Portland, it looks like.
But, yeah, I'm based in the Portland area, yes.
There you go.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast, Mail Order Zombie?
Just a little bit? How long do we have?
Well, I'm sure anybody who's listening to our podcast should already be listening to yours.
Okay.
But just for those, you know, few that haven't quite caught on yet.
Gotcha.
Give us the rundown.
So since January of 2008, we've been producing a show called Mail Order Zombie, which originally was going to focus on zombie movies that you can only get through the mail, like straight to DVD, Netflix style. Mm-hmm. Now, we've grown since then, and every week we review anywhere from 1 to 3 zombie movies. We've expanded to cover zombie video games, comic books, TV shows. We've done a zombie opera, film scores from zombie movies.
Oh, you're laughing. And,
I remember the zombie opera.
Yes. And like I said, it's a weekly show. To date, we've have, depending on when this goes out, 142 or 143 episodes. And we've reviewed over 250 zombie movies on the show. So,
Are you running out?
No. See, here's the thing. Low and no budget movie makers, for whatever reason, typically make a zombie movie at the very beginning of their career. So since, you know, there's all these zombie movies that are they keep coming out, I'm not going to run out anytime soon. When I started, there were over 500 zombie movies out there anyway.
Right.
And, you know, every week it seems like there's a new one coming, or one that was on VHS that got forgotten that's getting re-released now, or, you know, Zombieland comes out, so 7 or 8 clones come out.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not going to run out anytime soon. Sometimes that's not necessarily the best thing, but, yeah, I think we're if we do it every week, we'll probably keep going until about 2050.
Nice. Okay. All right.
Then maybe you'll retire.
Yeah.
So what how did you get into, you know, the zombie culture?
Okay. Well, my history is not like a lot of people who like grew up watching horror movies, that sort of thing. I wasn't allowed to watch R-rated movies as a kid. My parents kind of squashed the whole watching scary movie things. So when I turned 16 and had my own car and my own income, I went to the video store and just devoured as many horror movies as I could, you know, get my hands on.
So that strategy worked out well for them then as well.
Yes, yes, pretty much. My parents are so proud. I came across a documentary called Scream Greats, Volume 1, Tom Savini, Master of Special Makeup Effects, produced by Fangoria. But I didn't really know who Tom Savini was at the time, so I brought it home, checked it out, and I was just mesmerized by what this guy was doing. And through this documentary about him acting and specifically doing the special makeup effects for Uncle George Romero, I was introduced to Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead. So I went back to the video store, checked those out, and that was it. Those were the movies that got me hooked into, you know, zombie horror movies, and yeah, there I was.
Very cool.
Is there a connection there between, you know, getting into it because of this documentary about practical special effects? Is that, you know, is that some lingering effect from that still what drives you to the lower budget things where people still use practical effects rather than computers?
Yeah, a little bit. And actually, I've produced a zombie movie back in the late 90s as well. I mean, I'm very friendly to the low budget, no budget, independent guerrilla filmmakers out there, and I love supporting those. And that's another thing that I like to do with my show is, you know, kind of root around and find the really good stuff that you might overlook because it is low budget or you don't know any of the names involved. Well,
right.
You know, I like looking for those and bringing them to the forefront.
Now, the only thing about your show is you have strict rules on what makes a zombie movie.
Yeah, well, it started out rather strict, and I'd like to think that I've gotten a little bit more flexible over the years, but Jason Voorhees is still not a zombie.
And
I didn't know that there was an argument. I mean, this shows how out of touch I am, I guess, with the horror community. I didn't know that there was a faction that considered him a zombie.
Yeah. It's easy to call him a zombie because he did come back from the dead, but vampires come back from the dead, and they're not zombies. Mummies come back from the dead, they're not zombies. Frankenstein's monster is kind of sort of undead, but it's not a zombie. You know, it's an argument that we haven't had in a long time on the show, but it still comes up every once in a while.
Well, and then also like the Evil Dead movies, those are more, you know, demon-possessed, not zombies. Although people nowadays are calling them zombie movies, and I'm like, are you not watching the movie I've seen like 20 times?
Thank you. Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're demon possession movies, and I suppose there's a link, and you know, some of the aesthetics are the same. You know, take a group of people, put them in a small house, and throw supernatural forces against them, just like in the original Night of the Living Dead. So the aesthetics are kind of there, but no, it's not a zombie thing.
Yeah.
So we'll never, as much as I love Sam Raimi, and especially the original film, we'll never cover him on the show.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, we see.
All right.
I'm a huge fan, too. So another thing that you do on your show is, well, I mean, all the movies you review on your show, like you said, they're kind of low budget.
Right.
And I have got to say, you've probably watched a lot more horrible movies than I think I have.
Yeah,
and
Shannon,
I get dared movies
online. Yeah, Shannon goes out of her way to inflict bad movies on herself, and you kind of seek them out. Well, I don't know if you seek them out. Do you look for the bad movies, or some of the ones just come across your desk just turn out to be horrible?
Some of them, you know, I don't intentionally go looking for the bad ones. I knew going into things like Mulva, Zombie Ass Kicker, that it has a reputation for being really bad.
Great title, though.
Oh, it's a great title, and it's probably the best thing about that movie. No, I don't intentionally go looking for the bad ones. Unfortunately, there's a lot of them out there.
Right.
We do rate things on a scale of 1 to 5 headshots, and there are quite a few one headshot movies on our list.
Yeah, I mean, I have to find 3 good things to say about the movie.
Yeah.
But it can be any genre, you know, horror, sci-fi, and there have been quite a few horror zombie type things that I just don't get.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. It's like I was talking about earlier. These low budgeters, they want to make zombie movies, and that's great. I think it's wonderful to have more zombie media out there. The downside is that a lot of people who don't really know how to make a movie end up making a zombie movie because they think it's easy. I'm not saying that you shouldn't make a zombie movie or you shouldn't make movies at all, but there are certain elements of craft that sometimes get overlooked because, hey, I'm making this cool zombie movie, you know?
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, and here's the question that I think has been asked an infinite number of times over the last few years. Why zombies? What is the increasing appeal of zombies in media? What's behind it?
Okay, well, the first zombie movie came out in the 30s, and the fears that we as a culture had at the time were a little different than what they are now. But the thing about zombie movies is that as our fears as a culture evolve and change, zombie movies kind of evolve and change to represent, on some level, those fears that we have. In the 30s and 40s, there was imperialism and loss of identity and things like that. And movies like White Zombie and I Walk with a Zombie spoke to those fears. Uncle Romero makes no secret about his political messages that he puts into his zombie movies.
Well, and the consumerism type.
Yeah, the consumerism in Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, you know, there's all the military stuff. And, you know, even now with Diary of the Dead and Survival of the Dead, he's putting his messages into that. We have movies like 28 Days Later and these infected zombie movies. Well, I mean, one of the big fears that we have as a culture in mass are, you know, getting sick from some sort of epidemic, bird flu, you know, something like that. So these zombie movies allow us to explore these big fears that we all have in a way that maybe vampires or werewolves or these other things don't allow us to really get into.
I was just thinking,
so nobody's going to be writing a sparkly zombie.
That's what I was just thinking.
Yeah, hopefully one can hope.
It does seem like it would be awfully hard to romanticize a zombie, although Breathers comes close.
Well, there are some zombie movies that do play up the romantic element, sometimes with disastrous results, like Dead Girl.
Yeah. That was a good one, too.
Oh, it's like that.
Yeah.
It's a great movie. Fido has some like love relationship things in it. One of the lower budget movies I reviewed at the very beginning is called Zombie Love, which is a zombie musical.
Oh, my God.
It's fantastic. I gave it a pretty high rating, 4 or 5. And it's, you know, again, about a zombie and a person who falls in love with the person but doesn't know he's a zombie. And it's, you know, it's a place to explore that kind of stuff.
So, I mean, not only on your show do you talk about movies, but you talk about, you know, books. And I know you and your wife, Miss Bren, are huge fans of the Left 4 Dead video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, Left 4 Dead, we, thanks to the listeners of Mail Order Zombie, have our Dead Letter Award winners. We do the Dead Letter Awards every year to celebrate the best in zombie movies and media. And Left 4 Dead and Left 4 Dead 2 both won the video game categories those years. So
very cool.
Yeah.
And before we started recording, we were talking that you've actually been reading The Walking Dead.
Yes.
Yes. Obviously, The Walking Dead is one of those kind of zombie type stories that concentrate more on the people, which, I mean, people can argue that a lot of zombie movies, that's what it is. It's more about the survivors, not the zombies themselves. But do you think that AMC is going to be able to, pull it off?
Well, I'm going to be one of those people that would argue that the best stories, the best zombie stories are about the people dealing with the zombies. And I think The Walking Dead as the comic book really addresses that. Robert Kirkman did an incredible job creating a cast of characters and then just dropping them into a zombie environment. I think AMC has the right people and the right ingredients.
Right.
I never really thought about that before. The zombie, I mean, it's never really been explained in The Walking Dead, has it? I mean, kind of spoilers for if you haven't read it, but I mean, at the beginning, the guy just wakes up and boom, zombies, unexplained.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's very Romero. That's very old school, so to speak, that it just kind of happens. And again, that's where we can kind of can tap into some of the fears that we might have about, you know, epidemic and disease. It just happens. So with The Walking Dead, I think AMC's got a lot of the ingredients. I mean, they've got Kirkman involved, they got Darabont involved, who's a phenomenal filmmaker and storyteller in his own right. Mm-hmm. Greg Nicotero, who, you know, came up through the ranks through Cousin Savini and, you know, has been involved in a lot of zombie media over the years. He's involved. You've got a lot of good players involved. I can't wait to see what they're going to do. I think it's going to be good, but, you know, I'm a little nervous. I'm still a little nervous because it is AMC. It is not straight up cable. It's not HBO or Showtime. You know, it's not something where you can go completely, you know, unchecked in terms of, you know, the gore, because there is some gore.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
You can't completely unchecked in terms of the language. AMC has that gray area between like NBC and HBO. So we'll see what happens.
Right.
I have high hopes.
Yeah. Okay. Now, obviously, you know, listening to you talk here, there's a ton of zombie media out there. Movies, books, comics, mm-hmm. music. For people who are seeing this and thinking, you know, this maybe sounds like something that I'll enjoy, but where's a good place to begin?
Well, when I asked you guys what we were going to talk about, you told me that's one thing you wanted to cover, and I've been thinking about this a lot. You know, us geeks, we have some holy trilogies. You know, we have the Star Wars movies, we have the Indiana Jones, the Back to the Futures. Zombie geeks also have their own unholy trilogy, I suppose you could call it, and that's the first three Romero zombie movies, you know, Night, Dawn, and Day of the Dead. Mm-hmm. These, because they were my entry into it, I would recommend. However, they are a little dated.
Yes.
So if you're talking somebody who, you know, wants something a little bit more modern, as much as it bothers me in terms of what it did to the genre for a little while, I would say the Dawn of the Dead remake is probably a good entry point.
Yeah, and I actually really enjoyed it. I don't know if I've made you sit through that yet.
I,
the first 5 minutes is so creepy.
You know, I can't, because I get that and Resident Evil mixed up.
No,
I don't know.
But yeah, no, I agree with the Dawn of the Dead. It's a lot more, although then maybe if someone, you think they might enjoy that, do you think they might enjoy the 28 Days Later?
Probably. And, you know, for a long time, I even struggled with those movies, the 28 Days and 28 Weeks Later. And they're not real zombies. They're not dead. They're just really sick and really angry. You know, so, but, you know, I had to accept that this genre is one that evolves, and the infected zombie archetype, I suppose, right, is just as relevant and important as the undead and the voodoo style that you had pre-Uncle Romero. So,
I mean, because technically, if they aren't voodoo style, they really aren't zombies, if you want to go back to what
exactly
a zombie really is.
Exactly. So. Well, and, you know, we're reminded that in Night of the Living Dead, they're not even called zombies. They're called ghouls.
Right.
It was after that movie that they became zombies, and, well, there you go.
Yeah. I know, and then they only started eating brains in Return of the Living Dead.
Which is interesting, because that's the first time and the only time zombies ate brains. Yet nowadays, when you talk zombies, one of the first things somebody on the street, one of the normals would say is that, oh, they're eating brains, or do the brains thing. But that was Return. That was 1985. That's pretty recent.
I know.
And it's just the one time. Well, and then the franchise, it spawned. But it's just the one time. So
I know. It's so crazy.
Well, and, you know, you mentioned that Return of the Living Dead's also a good, you know, entry point.
It's very cheesy, though.
It is very cheesy. It's a fun 80s zombie movie. It's a zombie comedy. And if you want to go zombie comedy, well, then you can also go with Shaun of the Dead.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah,
you can. Well, and really Zombieland, too.
I think it's hard to go wrong with Shaun of the Dead.
It is. Zombieland, I think, is more acceptable more accessible to the non-zombie crowd, because it makes its own rules. It kind of plays off itself. Shaun of the Dead is going to work on the non-zombie loving crowd. But if you really like zombie movies, if you really like Romero's films, you're going to get so much more out of it as well.
Right.
Are there any books, or, you know, if you want to kind of expand the zombie universe, anything that people can branch out into that you can recommend?
Well, you definitely want to, you know, do The Walking Dead. We talked about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And I've got in my hands here, I've not read it yet, but I'm really excited about this. Kensington just put out a book called Undead by John Russo, and it's actually a reprinting of two of his novels, the novelization of Night of the Living Dead and the original Return of the Living Dead novel, which was what the movie was going to be based on before Dan O'Bannon and company got their hands on it. This I'm really looking forward to read. I hear it's fantastic.
Cool.
So I'm looking forward to that. Also, Robert Friess has a book called Bijou of the Dead that takes zombie movies, rubs a little Italian splatter into it, kind of Return of the Living Dead style. But Romero, it's a good book that's also getting a re-release on Halloween, actually. So Bijou of the Dead, I'd check that one out as well.
All right.
Awesome.
Very cool.
That'd be cool.
All right. And if people want to keep up with all things mail order zombie and keep listening to your reviews and your recommendations, where can they go?
Well, our website's mailorderzombie.com. We're also in the iTunes store, the Zune Marketplace, pretty much anywhere you can download podcasts. If you do a search for us, you'll find us there. Or, like I said, the website. We have an iPhone app as well. You can find us, you know, for your iPhone, where it downloads straight to you. So, yeah, I mean, just look us up on the internet. We're there.
Awesome.
There you go.
Well, thank you so
much. One last question.
Yes, sir.
What are you dressing up for as for Halloween?
I haven't decided yet. I'm really stumped. I'm stuck. I typically do a zombie thing. And last year, I really kind of topped myself. I was a zombie Santa Claus.
Oh, jeez.
That's not right.
Which I now sell Christmas cards of. So.
And that's not right.
My wife, you know, Bren helped me out with the makeup. We've got a dangly eye hanging out, and all it's good. So yeah, Zombie Santa last year. I don't know how to top that. So I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Zombie Tooth Fairy.
Oh,
I don't want to put me in a tutu. That's a whole different kind of scary.
Well, I don't know. The Rock is pretty tall. You're pretty tall. You know, he was a tooth fairy in a movie.
You know, I appreciate the comparison between me and the Rock. It means a lot, but I don't know how true that really is.
All right. Well, Brother D, thanks so much. Mail Order Zombie, the podcast. Everybody should be listening to it. Yes. If you're listening to us and you're not listening to Mail Order Zombie, you're really missing out. And say hi to Miss Bren for us.
Will do. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
See it coming. Get a gun and get me running as I'm shunning gently smoker, because I don't want to be done by the dumb-headed undead cannibal cadavers. Nothing matters. Lost my mind and bladder. Another zombie attack. Nobody watching my back. With all the allies I lack, no time to plan. Just react to the fact that this survivor has to go in alone. I don't want to be a hero. I just want to go home. Another zombie attack. They're lurking out in the black, and now I'm totally fracked. The hungry leopards attract further factions here to hunt me on the streets where I roam. I don't want to be a
all
hero.
All right.
Zombies. Yeah.
So, Brother D, mailorderzombie.com.
Yeah.
I swear he sees too many movies that are even worse than the ones I've seen. But Mail Order Zombie, really good. Derek, Brother D,
yeah,
knows his stuff.
Oh, definitely.
He's also
doing a sort of what's he calling it? Plan D, the countdown to Halloween. If you're a fan of the Mail Order Zombie and can't get enough of Brother D, he's got a separate.
He's going nuts and doing other.
Yes,
podcasts.
doing another countdown to Halloween podcast, which is also very good.
Yes, and if zombies aren't entirely your thing, but post apocalyptic stuff is, mm-hmm. His wife Miss Bren actually does reviews of books and sometimes joins him on the reviews of some of the movies on the podcast. So mailorderzombie.com, they have a, like he said, an app, and it's pretty awesome.
Very, very good. Now, of course, the big news in zombies in the Seattle area.
Right. ZombieCon is coming to Seattle Halloween weekend at the Seattle Center.
Yes, October. Well, it's kind of at the Seattle Center and
a bunch of different places.
They're spreading it out. October 29th through 31st. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on over the course of the weekend. If you're going, you definitely want to sit down with the schedule of events and plan out what you want to do.
Right. And not only are there so many events and movies and things going on, but there's a lot of separate ticketed events that, you know, just when you're planning your schedule, you need to be planning your budget too.
Yes. A lot of the bigger events are going to be separately ticketed, so you definitely want to plan out which ones you want to go to and buy tickets in advance.
Right.
Like the screening of Evil Dead with
Bruce Campbell
is a separately ticketed event. The Zombie Prom is a separately ticketed event.
Mm-hmm. Clockwork Orange with Malcolm McDowell, the George Romero stuff. Well, the day passes are $25 a day and $40 for Saturday and Sunday. 3 days, $60. That gets you into the exhibit hall and
the dealer's room, some of the panel, most of the panels.
Yeah, the panels, but and maybe a surprise here or there.
Yeah.
And of course, there's actually VIP tickets that you can buy that are even more expensive that actually get you into the line for panels sooner.
You can jump the lines and have priority seating and that sort of stuff.
And, you know, get to meet the authors, the stars and things before everybody else.
There are definitely going to be some very cool people there.
Right. The prom night on Friday at Numo's is about $30 a person if it's pre-bought.
Yeah. And you do get a $5 discount if you come dressed as a zombie.
And as a couple, I guess.
And why wouldn't you?
Well, I guess. The movies, which I was a little confused. Some of them are showing at McCall Hall at SIFF.
Yeah, that's the SIFF Cinema.
And some of them seem like they're going to be at the Pacific Place.
Yeah.
Which is like 7th and Pioneer Pike or whatever. So that's not exactly close to the Seattle Center, but you can take the monorail over.
Yeah, you can take the monorail over.
So the movies run from $10 a ticket to $35 a ticket, depending on the movie and whether there's a celebrity involved.
Right.
So have fun. It's going to be zombies, nonstop zombie fun all weekend.
George Romero.
Bruce Campbell. Ted Raimi.
S.G. Brown.
Mm-hmm. Max Brooks. A bunch of people are going to be there. You know, with conventions like this, just remember that if you want anything signed, autographed,
usually the celebrities that are signing stuff, they will also charge for it.
They will also charge for that. So I wish we were going because I have an Autolycus figure that I love Bruce Campbell to sign. But we can't make it. We are so busy.
Yes.
But
the aforementioned Zaxi. They're going to be there, so keep an eye on Zaxxy.com. They're going to be covering it.
Yeah, and they're also going to have a meetup at the Night Kitchen one of the nights, so you can check out that. So ZombieCon sounds fun. Way too involved for us that weekend. We were very, very busy. So if you go, we'd love to hear about
tweets and pictures and all that sort of stuff, because it sounds like it's going to be an interesting weekend.
Yeah, and you can go to www.zombcon.com for more info.
Yep, ZombieCon.
ZombieCon.
If you're not in Seattle and are still wanting to get your zombie on...
Halloween weekend.
The Walking Dead on AMC premieres 10 p.m. on Halloween night.
Oh my gosh.
I can't remember a TV show that I have been anticipating this much...
Right.
Well, ever.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of anything offhand that I've been this excited
to see. Not for something brand new.
Yeah.
Now, I've been trying to keep away from most of the press.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a couple of shots, close-ups of, like, zombie makeup shots. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, from a couple months ago. And I'm like, all right, that's cool. Tonight, I watched the trailer, which was actually very long, like a 3-minute trailer.
Yeah.
It was the closest thing I can say is it was like watching the 300 trailer and knowing that exact shots were taken from the comic book.
Right. Yeah. All of the comic book movies, well, even Watchmen, you know, it's like they show all of the shots in the trailer. It's like, yep, that's from the comic. Yep, that's from the comic. That's from the comic. And there's been a lot of really good kind of behind the scenes stuff, promo stuff going on.
Which, yeah, that's one thing I was like, I want to see the trailer before we talk about it. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you said you watched a few of the
scenes. I've watched some of the behind the scenes stuff. I've kind of been reading a lot of the press. I'm very, very encouraged. They've had Robert Kirkman on set for a lot of the production of the first season. They've already been renewed for a second season.
Yeah.
So that's how confident I think AMC is that this is going to do well. And I understand that when you're in the middle of something and it's, you know, it's all you've been living, breathing, and working, it's kind of hard to be objective about it. So Robert Kirkman raving about how excited he is about this and how awesome he thinks it's going to be, you can take with a small grain of salt, but even so, the creator of the source material is enthusiastic about the adaptation that's being made of his work. So that's always a positive sign in my mind.
It's better than being grumpy and saying, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yes.
Hear me, Anne Rice. Okay. you can go to amctv.com to see. We'll have a link in the show notes, and you can look up the trailers and behind the scenes and photos. And
I just want to say, briefly mention, I realize that for things like the trailer and the behind the scenes promo stuff, they're always going to use like the coolest stuff they have, but the makeup effects look awesome.
Yeah, and there is even a couple of things in the trailer I'm like, I don't remember that work being in the thing, but it makes sense because this is what happened.
Yeah.
So even if you're not a fan of the Walking Dead comics or you haven't read them yet, you definitely, if you're a zombie fan, you need to be watching this. Set your DVR, Halloween night, 10 p.m. AMC. And of course, we have AMC HD, so we're going to be watching it.
And if you're not a zombie fan, you may want to check this out anyway. I mean, the zombie apocalypse is, I think, a stand-in for any generic, you know, pick your end of civilization event.
Right. And the thing is, the cool thing about The Walking Dead is it is way more about the people and their relationships than every once in a while a zombie try to walk by and bite them.
Yeah.
That's about it. So.
And yeah, it really is. It could be anything. It could be, you know, a super flu like in The Stand.
Right.
That causes the end of civilization and how the people react to that situation. So don't get caught up on it being like, oh, it's zombies. I don't like zombies. They're silly, whatever.
Right.
Check it out anyway.
Yeah, especially if you're a fan of Mad Men and Breaking Bad and how good those series can be, definitely give Walking Dead,
suck.
I know, in 2 weeks we'll kind of do a review.
Yes.
So.
When I finally get home, I turn on the TV. The undead on the evening news is all I can see. So I pop in a movie and I try to relax. Listen to me while I tell you some facts. Fact, the zombie apocalypse is messing up my week.
All right, we're winding down the month of good horror movies.
Well, we're kind of winding it down. I only only had time to watch one of the horror movies I meant to watch two of this week.
Well, that just means you've got three for next week.
Right. Luckily, one of them's only like an hour and 15 minutes.
Ooh, so. Short. All right.
Yeah.
So what did you watch this week?
I watched Martyrs from 2008, which is from France.
Right. This is supposed to be sort of the Hostel, Saw, extreme horror kind of thing.
That's what you've heard.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Not what the movie is.
Okay.
It's extremely ultra violent.
Okay.
But that being said, it's a very strange movie. It's probably one of the strangest horror movies I've ever seen because you could almost not call it a horror movie other than the violence.
Okay.
Now, I don't want to give too much away, but the filmmakers describe a martyr as a witness.
Okay.
Now, you can take that however you want. They actually don't put that till the end of the movie.
But, all right.
That's not really entirely, spoiling anything. The strange thing about this movie is that it's almost three movies thrown together.
Okay, how long is it?
Hour 37 minutes.
Wow, three movies in an hour and 37 minutes.
That's why it's very strange.
All right.
So, essentially, the plot, the first part of the plot is about this girl who had been abducted and... bad things kind of... She was kidnapped, and weird experiments were
aliens?
Done to her. No, by people.
All right.
Which kind of is where you're getting the Hostel stuff,
mm-hmm.
where you've heard the Hostel stuff. She finally gets away. She's put in a juvenile hospital, and she meets up another little girl who's had kind of like abuse problems and stuff. That's like the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Okay. So they get that out of the way quick.
They do. Then the movie goes into 15 years later,
uh-huh.
where we found out that the girl that was abducted is trying to figure out who abducted her and wants revenge.
I see. Okay. So we've gone into I Spit on Your Grave territory.
Right.
Then.
And of course, her childhood friend is kind of coming along to, because there's some weird things happening that's almost, I got to say, it's almost Asian horror related. Like, you don't know exactly what's going on, but there's things that you can see, but you can't really see, and it's very confusing.
Creepy girls with long black hair climbing out of television sets?
Close.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, so, I don't want to say, coming out of the TV set, but there's some really odd visuals. Then, I don't want to talk about the plot anymore, because it gets really, really
weird.
It gets
all spoilery.
Yeah, it gets all spoilery, and it's just...
Was it good?
See, I can't even say it was good. It was the strangest thing I think I've ever seen.
Stranger than the bed that eats?
Yes.
Wow.
At least that, you could see that some guy had a nightmare and went, okay, I get it. It's just, actually, now that I think about it, it's about four different movies that it puts it.
Wow.
It ends up being this weird cult that is involved with the abduction of these people.
Okay.
So it's not just the one girl at the beginning of the movie. It's
Cthulhu cultist?
No, that would have made more sense.
Oh,
but
dear.
It's very strange. If you're if you're into the whole Hostel Saw thing, you actually might be disappointed with this because most of the violence is done in like the first 20 minutes and the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Okay.
It's very strange.
Would I enjoy it?
No.
All right.
It's just about how it really kind of boils down to what humans can endure,
mm-hmm.
which I guess is kind of what a martyr is. I don't know. It's very strange. So yeah, I can't really recommend it. If you're interested in something very strange, and of course, I don't know if it was entirely strange because it was a French horror movie, because I've seen some French horror movies and I understood mm-hmm. it, but also the really strange thing is if you are going to rent this, watch the introduction by the writer/director.
Okay.
Because he will apologize for what you're about to see.
Oh, dear. That's not a good thing.
He's like, I'm really sorry about what you're going to watch. I hope you enjoy it, but I hope you won't be mad at me. Something like that. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really weird. So.
That's very odd.
I can understand where it's kind of more of an art house kind of, okay, but it's also very ultra-violent. But not violent enough for the Saw Hostel fans.
Okay.
So, very weird.
Very strange. All right. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Everyone wants to say about it. It was really strange.
So what's coming up next week?
Next week, we got The Old Dark House from 1932. I found out that that's Boris Karloff and the director of the original Frankenstein that he was in.
Oh, hell, how bad can it be?
This is done a year later after Frankenstein, the movie, and it's a black comedy.
Okay.
Uh-huh. About a really strange family, apparently, in an old dark house. I'm also going to be watching the Vincent Price classic Theater of Blood with Diana Rigg.
Nice.
From 1973.
Hard to go wrong with things like that. I'm sure there's going to be a certain cheese factor to it, but
and I also heard that this actually was done on stage with Diana Rigg's daughter in London.
Oh, neat.
So, pretty cool. And then Shallow Ground from 2004. So, I actually might watch these in
chronological
order.
In release order.
Because if I watch something modern then go back to something older, it doesn't work very well. So,
all right. Well, we'll look forward to hearing about that.
Yeah. All right. We have one more week for this.
Yes. One more week. You heard us talking about The Strain and The Fall, Guillermo del Toro's and Chuck Hogan's, the first two books of The Strain trilogy. Mm-hmm. We have signed copies of The Strain and The Fall, signed by Guillermo del Toro.
A few weeks back.
When he was here at the EMPS FM talking about the books.
The Strain is paperback. The Fall is obviously hardback that just came out.
Yep.
Just go to our website, comment on the post for the contest.
Yeah, look for the contests tab and it will direct you to the correct post.
Yep, the contest will run until October 28th, which is next Thursday, and we will be picking the winner on the show that day.
Yes.
Oh, and I found out, just as a strange side note, Milan, who won the pack swag bag who didn't get back to me in time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's from Serbia.
Oh, interesting.
So we picked the new winner last week.
Yeah, sorry, Milan.
Sorry, yeah. He understood.
Yeah.
Apparently you don't check your email very often if you're in Serbia. I didn't even realize that that might have been a thing.
Next week on Serbia Geekly.
Yeah, exactly. But now I'm going to be sending the pack swag bag to California.
Oh, so all right. Well, there
cheaper.
You go.
Yeah.
Next week on California Geekly.
Pleasanton, California. All right, let's get on to some news.
Yes, continuing the zombie theme.
Man, I'll tell you, news this week was not good. There was like almost nothing to talk about. So this isn't even that great of news, but we're going to talk about it.
I mean, there was a lot of stuff, but a lot of it was like rumor and speculation about like, ooh, is Jon Hamm going to play Superman?
Well, we
maybe,
won't know
but
until they start filming.
Yeah.
And oh no, Mel Gibson isn't going to be in a Hangover 2.
What?
I don't care. I know.
Anyway,
zombies go medieval. So Amber Entertainment is teaming with British comic book house 2080.
Oh.
Who are the people that did Judge Dredd?
Yeah, Judge Dredd. Yeah.
And it's Rebellion publishing arm to bring medieval zombie tale Stronghold to life as a feature film.
Oh, that's actually very cool.
Yeah. Now, Stronghold centers on Welsh rebels utilizing druidic magic to summon an undead army to aid them in their quest to overthrow English tyranny.
Undead zombie druids?
Well, I don't know if they're druids. It'll be like Army of Darkness, but in medieval times. Well, no, it wasn't medieval times.
Yeah, that
times.
Was in medieval times.
But, like, they're doing it not against Evil Ash. They're doing it about, like, you know.
This has potential to be awesome.
Robin Hood. I don't know. So the hero of the story is a young knight who defies his masters to rescue the daughter of his enemy while battling legions of the revenge-driven dead.
Nice. All
sounds
right.
Kind of cool.
Well, we'll have to keep an eye out for this one. There are a couple of names attached to it.
We don't really need to talk about that because we're not exactly, you know, what's going on.
This is well in advance, but we'll be keeping our eye on this one.
Yeah.
A 2000 AD zombie movie.
Set in Wales?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I can see that.
Speaking of The Walking Dead.
Yes, if you weren't getting enough Walking Dead with the comic book and the AMC series.
Right.
Robert Kirkman and Jay
Bonansinga
are going to be writing a trilogy of Walking Dead novels.
Right. They have been essentially sold to Tor UK, which is a little strange because I don't know why they didn't do it to Tor USA, but
yay, Tor.
Yay, Tor. The trilogy will feature new stories and will debut in November 2012, so that's kind of a long ways away.
Well, he's got to actually write them. Well, I don't know.
Well,
maybe he's
true.
Already got them written. I don't know.
And The Walking Dead actually will be debuting in the UK on the 5th of November, so they're really expecting
Guy Fawkes Day.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think will be watching
I don't think
V for Vendetta.
Yeah, I don't think the zombies are going to be trying to blow up Parliament, but you never know.
Okay. So not only will it be a comic book, a TV series, but you'll actually have zombie prose.
Zombie novels. All right.
That'll be interesting.
We'll keep an eye on those as well.
Also, in the Harry Potter news...
This is also topical for things that we've been discussing.
This is the only thing I could find.
It's amazing.
Daniel Radcliffe wants to play Dumbledore in the Harry Potter remake.
Now, of course, you realize Hollywood is rebooting everything.
Right.
Everything goes in a cycle. Now, it seems like, you know, they're dredging up, I don't know what, Knight Rider, probably. Who knows? Anyway, so Daniel Radcliffe is setting his, staking out his claim to roles in the Harry Potter reboot, the eventual inevitable Harry Potter reboot.
He told a showbiz spy, I don't really know what that means, but in an interview that he would be happy to return to the franchise if it was remade. He actually said, I'm sure one day, probably years and years from now, someone will want to remake them as new films. If the call comes, I wouldn't come back as Harry. No, if they did it in 30 years, I think I'd want to be Sirius Black. If they do it in 50, it would have to be Dumbledore.
Yeah.
But I think Sirius is one every actor wants to play.
So there you go. I would actually, I'd be okay with that. You know, if they remake the Harry Potter movies in 30 years, in 50 years, having Harry. Daniel Radcliffe playing Dumbledore, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is why we don't talk about, like,
movie rumor and speculation. This is what it comes down to.
Is it that or that? They're rebooting Hellraiser, apparently. I'm really upset.
Okay, why? Anyway. Music this week was The Quick and the Dead from our buddies Death Star, and Zombie Apocalypse, also from our buddies Kirby Crackle.
Mm-hmm. Next show, episode 83, will be our winter movies show. We have an interview lined up, but it's not entirely set in stone yet, so I don't want to say anything about it. But we'll also review upcoming movies from the next 3 months.
That's right.
And, you know, we like to play the trailers and then talk about them. And
yeah.
There aren't a lot of genre stuff, but Tron Legacy.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
So if people want to find out more about us, how do they do it?
Check out our website at seattle-geekly.com to get shortcuts to find us on YouTube, Twitter, Flickr, and become our Facebook friend. Also, I just want to put a little note. Would anybody be incredibly mad if I took down our MySpace page? Let me know.
Nobody's saying no?
Yeah, nobody's saying anything?
All right. No objections? Well, I mean, you haven't. It's not like we've been maintaining it.
I know. I just think I want to take it down.
Well, I mean, you can leave it there to fester. It's not doing any harm.
No, I don't want to leave it there to fester. I heard that Molly Lewis song, dude.
Hey, Molly. If you do download the podcast from iTunes or Zune, please log in and give us a rating or review. It helps get us a little bit more visibility. More visibility means better content and more giveaways.
You can always email us at SeattleGeekly, all one word, at gmail.com with questions, comments, or call 206-201-2352 to leave us a message or question.
We will have show notes up at seattle-geekly.com. In those notes will be links to follow for more information about everything we have talked about today. Thank you for listening, and hopefully we have helped satisfy the brain-eating geek in you.
There
really was only from that one movie, though.
Revenge of the Living Dead. I know.
Yeah.
Can't update the Twitter stream. Toes.
Toes?
Zombie apocalypse. It wouldn't be so bad if these zombies hadn't bitten my mom and dad. I decapitated them and now they buried him back. I called my friend to see if he could come by my place. By the time he reached my door, he was missing his face. I feel kind of bad that I did not let him in, but without his lips, he still had a grin. The zombie apocalypse is messing up my week. It's hard to watch the Daily Show over all the cries and screams. The zombie apocalypse, I'd rather fight a shark. I read in a book that you can punch them in the eye, but sharks are my problem, yeah, and zombies are. I've never seen so many girls outside without their clothes on. Normally I think that's awesome, but it's actually a turnoff, cause I'm not into necrophilia, that's a fact. Zombies moving slow, I feel like Jackie Joyner. Curse, they're like the popular kid in school, and everybody wants a piece of me, but they can't, cause I like my pieces intact.
getting kind of lonely out here by myself. The food's running low, there's dust on the shelf, but at least I have the voices arguing in my head, which is much better than being undead.